Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 20, Bali Maharaj surrenders the universe. Today we're reading text 5 and 6. Text 5 does not have a purport, so I'll just read it myself, and then together we will chant the next text, number 6. So text 5. So you don't have to repeat this. Naham bibhemi nirayan badanyat asukarnava nastana chavanan mrityor yatavi pro pralambanat. Translation. I do not fear hell, poverty, an ocean of distress, fall down from my position, or even death itself, as much as I fear cheating a brahmana. Text 6. Yad dasyati loke smin samparetam danadikam tasya Tyage nirmitam kim vipras tushyen na tena chet yad yad dasyati lokesmin samparetam danadikam tasya tyage nimittam kim vipras tushyena tena chet yad yad dasyati lokesmin samparetam danadikam tasya tyage nimittam kim vipras tushyena tena chet yad yad dasyati lokesmin samparetam danadikam tasya tyage nimittam kim vipras tushyena tena chet yad yad dasyati lokesmin samparetam danadikam asyante samparetam danadikam lokesmin samparetam danadikam tasya tyage nimittam kim vastu shena tena tasya chage nimitam kim yasato shena tena cha yad yad asyati loke smin sabre tam danadi kao asyati nimitam kim. Yad yad asyati loke smin samparetam danadikam tasya tyage nimitam kim vishas tushe natena cha. Vaishnavis, yad yad asyati loke smin samparetam danadikam tasya tyage nimitam kim viprastushe natena cha sati loke smin adikam adikam nimitam kim. Yet, whatsoever hasyati will leave loke in the world asmin in this samparetam, one who is already dead, dana adikam, his wealth and riches, tasya, of such wealth, tyage, renunciation, nimitam, the purpose, kim, what is, vipraha, the brahmana who is confidentially Lord Vishnu, tushyet, must be pleased, na, is not, tena, by such riches, chet, if there is a possibility. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. My Lord, you can also see that all the material opulences of this world are certainly separated from their possessor at death. Therefore, if the Brahmana Vamana Dev is not satisfied by whatever gifts one has given, why not please him with the riches one is destined to lose at death? Purport. The word vipra means Brahmana and at the same time confidential. Bali Maharaj had confidentially decided to give the gift to Lord Vamanadeva without discussion. But because such a decision would hurt the hearts of the Asuras and his spiritual master, Shukracharya, he spoke equivocally. Bali Maharaj, as a pure devotee, had already decided to give all the land to Lord Vishnu. Om Jnanatim Arandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, Bali Maharaj is expressing his unwillingness to go back on his word, to go back on his promise to Vamanadev. And in the previous verse, we see it stated very nicely, I do not fear hell, poverty, an ocean of distress, fall down from my position, or even death itself, as much as I fear cheating a Brahmana. In other words, he had promised something to this Brahman, and he wasn't going to go back on his promise. And this value of truthfulness is very important. It's said that there are four pillars of religion. There's satyam, truthfulness, daya, mercy, saucham, cleanliness, and tapa, austerity. You know, those are the four pillars of religion. Once I was in South India, in Tamil Nadu state, at a place called Salem, Salem. And there are devotees there. They were building a temple. And they were building it in a very traditional fashion. They had stone carvers carving these big stone pillars, dozens and dozens of them. But there were four main pillars that they're going to put in their altar, I mean their temple room. You know, the four main pillars holding up the temple room. They had carved on them in Sanskrit and English, truthfulness, mercy, austerity, cleanliness. So those are the principles of religion, and one of them is truthfulness. However, in the age of Kali, these pillars of religion have deteriorated very much from previous ages. And we can see here how seriously Bali Maharaj was taking his vow, his promise to Vamanadeva. Of course, there are many reasons for that. He had some confidential understanding that it was actually Vishnu, the Supreme Lord, who is the proprietor of everything, really. But on another level, you know, he's presenting it as Dharma, sticking to the vow of truthfulness. And especially the Kshatriyas were very strictly observing this truthfulness. And if they made a promise or a vow, they wouldn't go back on it, usually. So, like we can see the example of Maharaj Dasarath in the Ramayana. You know, he had more than one wife, but his two principal wives were Kaushalya and Kaikeyi. Kaushalya was the mother of Lord Ram, and Kaikeyi was the mother of Bharat. And he had made a promise to Kaikeyi because Kaikeyi had rendered him some service. And he says, well, I'll offer you a benediction, whatever you like. And she said, I'll take it later. So later, when it came time for Ram to be crowned as king, she went to him and said, okay, now I'm going to cash in my benediction. Yeah, you promised me something, so here's what I want. I want you to make my son, Bharat, the king. And Dasarath, Maharaj Dasarath, felt bound by that vow. stated in like verse 5, it says, Bali Maharaj saying, I do not fear hell. I mean, just imagine going to hell. I mean, by not sticking to your vow or your promise or your statement, if by telling a little lie you could avoid going to hell, then many people would think, well, why not? Or poverty. Or fall down from one's position. You would think, in the Kali Yuga kind of mentality, well, of course. So in Kali Yuga, this mentality is very prominent. Untruthfulness, lying, cheating, going back on one's word, it's just considered the normal state of affairs. I was reading in the news recently at Dartmouth University, 64 students were found guilty of cheating. And it's interesting, the class they were caught cheating in was their ethics class. So, it's very prominent. Actually, I was doing a little research on the web about cheating and students, and there are huge elaborate websites instructing teachers how to detect their students cheating. Yeah, because everybody has these little smartphones these days. You can sit there, look up anything, send a text to your friend in the next row. So they say, you should wander around the classroom with a cell phone detector. They can tell if the signal's on. If the signal's on, you should watch very carefully what's going on. And so they've in the age of Kali, untruthfulness, lying, cheating is important. It's very prominent, these days. But especially these Kshatriyas, they felt very bound if they had given a promise. Like I said, Maharaj Dasarath had given the promise to his queen Kaikeyi, and he was bound by it. He felt bound by it. So, in devotional service, we also take vows. At the time of initiation, we make promises. you can see the recordings, the videos of initiations given by Srila Prabhupada, where he asks, and what vows are you promising to follow? And the devotee has to recite, no meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex, no intoxication, chant 16 rounds a day. And these vows are made in the presence of all the devotees, in the presence of the spiritual master, in the presence of the deities. So it's expected that they'll be followed. And Srila Prabhupada accepted it. Sometimes you would say, you promised in front of me, in front of the deities, in front of all the assembled devotees to follow. So then how can you not follow? Or we may take vows at the time of a marriage. And so there are different circumstances in which in our devotional lives we do take vows and make promises. And they're meant to be taken very seriously. So that's one lesson we can draw from this whole pastime of Bali Maharaj surrendering the universe to Vamandev. He made a vow and he's keeping it. Or we can see just recently, there was the Christmas book distribution marathon. So over the past couple of years, the leaders of this movement have made a vow to increase book distribution. they've promised Srila Prabhupada, we're going to increase our book distribution by at least 10%. And I've seen personally, at least, how the devotees in this temple and the BBT, they're just as serious as Pali Maharaj in making this kind of vow. And by the grace of Krishna, they were successful. So this taking of vows can be very powerful, because Krishna observes and he can empower one. Krishna himself makes promises to his devotees. Mamana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskaru mama vaishasi satyam te prati jane priyosi me. So manmana, just think of me. Bhava mad bhakto, just become my devotee. Mamana bhava madhyaji, just worship me. Mam namaskaru, offer your obeisances to me. And then Krishna promises, he says, pratijane. Pratijane means promise in Sanskrit. I promise you will come to me. Or he says, sarva dharman parityaja, mamikam sharanam vaja, aham tvam sarva papa ebyo, moksha yashami masuchaha. Says, you just surrender to me, then I promise I will relieve you from all sinful reactions. So Krishna makes his promises, and he keeps them. So in the same way, if we make promises to Krishna and Krishna's representatives, then we should also keep them. And especially for the Kshatriyas, this becomes a principle with them. It's pretty amazing. In the Battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna had promised he wouldn't fight. He would just serve as the chariot driver of Arjuna. One of the other devotees who gave class mentioned this recently, but it's worth repeating. So Krishna had made that vow not to fight. And Bhishma, who was fighting on the other side, he was a devotee, but he was fighting on the side of the Kurus, and Krishna was on the side of the Pandavas, the sons of Pandu, Yudhisthira, Arjuna, Bhima, Nakula, Sahadev. So they had been deprived of their kingdom by King Dhritarashtra and his son Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra's other 100 sons. So there was a big battle. You had to determine who would be ruling the kingdom. And somehow Bhishma found himself obliged to be on the side of Duryodhana. So he was fighting. He was a very powerful warrior. But he had some affection for the Pandavas, for Arjuna, Yudhisthira, and the rest. And therefore, Duryodhana, the leader of the Kurus, would sometimes accuse him of not fighting to his full ability. Think maybe you're just a little soft on these Pandavas, and that's why you're not destroying them in the battles that we're fighting every day. So Bhishma made a vow. He said, I will kill them. I'll kill all five of them, and I'm going to make five special arrows, one for each of them. And tomorrow I'm going to unleash these special arrows at them, and I assure you they will all five of them be killed. So he took out five arrows from his quiver and he chanted special mantras over them and said, now these arrows are fully energized and I'll be able to use them tomorrow to kill the Pandavas. This is described in the Mahabharata. And Duryodhana said, well, that's very good, but until tomorrow, just let me keep those arrows, because you can never tell. You know, these guys, the Pandavas, Krishna, they're very tricky. You never know what they're going to do. So he took the arrows. But then there was one detail that he had forgotten. That previous to this, he had given Arjuna a benediction. And this had to do with the time that the Pandavas were in exile, when the Kurus, when Duryodhana and his evil ministers had deprived the Pandavas of the kingdom and sent them out into the forest to exile, to live in poverty and secrecy. Duryodhana thought, let me go out to the forest. I'll bring all my queens, all my wealth, all my queens all dressed in beautiful garments, all my power. I'll just, like if you had, say if you were having a rivalry with someone and you kind of defeated them, and then you just go to where they are just to kind of display your opulence, just to humiliate them even further. Like Draupadi would be there dressed in rags, and he'd be there with his queens all decked out in their finery. How's it going, Pandavas? So he did that. And, the Pandavas were out in the forest near some lake. So by the side of the lake, he was going to start building this huge pleasure palace where he was going to display his opulence and wealth and power to them to embarrass them and humiliate them. But there was this king of the Gandharvas named Chitrasena who suddenly showed up and said, this is my place. And the Gandharvas are heavenly beings, celestial beings from some higher level of reality. But sometimes they come to earth. So he said, you can't build your little tent city here. This is mine. Clear out. So Duryodhana refused. And then there was a big battle. And in the battle, the Gandharvas, being more powerful, prevailed. And they killed a lot of the Kuru soldiers, and they captured Duryodhana. A few soldiers escaped and they ran away to where the Pandavas were and they told them what happened. Now, because the Pandavas were, compassionate even to the people who tried to oppose them, they said, well, there are relatives somehow or other, we should try to free them. So the Pandavas gathered together some weapons, and they went and they fought the Gandharvas, and they defeated them. So Duryodhana was actually appalled by this, because now he had to be, you know, he had come to display his opulence to the Pandavas, but he had been defeated, and now they had rescued him and were displaying their superiority. So he decided to commit suicide. But the demons in the universe at the higher levels, who were behind the whole battle between, you know, the Pandavas and the Kurus, you know, on the one side there were the demons, the other side Krishna and the demigods, who were manipulating the whole situation. So the demons, they brought Duryodhana to their planet in his subtle body and said, "What's this idea? You're going to commit suicide? No, you go back there. You just pay your respects to the Pandavas and then go back to your city and continue to prepare for this final battle of Kurukshetra." So he did that. You know, he went. He humbled himself. You know, he offered Arjuna a benediction. You know, whatever you like, you can always ask from me. So, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Arjuna went to Duryodhana to get the five arrows that Bhishma had prepared. So, you know, he came there at night, because at night, according to the etiquette, you know, both sides, they could go, I mean, they would fight like anything during the day, but at night they would visit each other, and you know, it was very chivalrous in that respect. So Arjuna came to Duryodhana's tent, and Duryodhana said, "What do you want?" He said, "I've come to claim my benediction that you promised when I rescued you from the Gandharvas." And he said, "What do you want?" And he said, "I want the five arrows that you're holding for Bhishma." So he gave the arrows to Arjuna. But he said, "Okay, I'm going to give you the arrows, but I just want to know one thing. How did you know I had them?" And he said, "Krishna told me." He said, "Ah, Krishna." So then the next day came, and Bhishma told Dronacharya, "Okay, so Krishna took the arrows, tricky guy that he is, so I can't use those arrows. So I can't kill all five of the Pandavas tomorrow, but I am going to kill Arjuna. I'm going to focus all my attention on him, and I'm going to, the only way that he could possibly be saved is if Krishna gives up his vow not to fight." So in the battle the next day, it was a huge battle, and Bhishma just rained arrows like rain down on Arjuna, and Arjuna actually was in some danger of losing. So at that time, Krishna gave up his promise. Well, it's interesting what happened. You know, he jumped down from the chariot, he grabbed a chariot wheel, and he began rushing at Bhishma with this huge wheel in his hand. But that moment, the time came for the battle to end. They conducted these battles according to certain rules. It's like a football game or something. When the fourth quarter is over, it stops. So just at that time, the battle stopped. Of course, Bhishma had already fired a lot of arrows at Krishna. But the point is, Srila Prabhupada explains in his purports about this that Krishna gave up his promise to satisfy the promise of his devotee. Because Bhishma had promised, I am going to challenge Arjuna so severely that Krishna will have to give up his vow not to fight. So sometimes, you know, Krishna gives up his promise in order to fulfill the promise of his devotees. But as far as we're concerned, if we make promise to Krishna, you know, we should keep our promises. So, yes, Virgupati.
We thank you for a wonderful class. So, in the first part of your class, you made the case for how important it is to keep the vows, you know. And even right now in the end, you made the point that for us, it's, you know, topmost importance to keep vows. But it seems like sometimes there even is something higher than keeping a vow. Unless Krishna was prepared to give up his vow in order to protect his devotee. What about something like this? Sometimes, like Prabhupada, for instance, initiated a lot of devotees. Some of them, they weren't around for very long, and in his mind, that he might have even known that, well, I don't know if, you know, it's going to be possible for these people to keep the vows or not. I mean, it took them, when they got initiation, everybody got initiation has to take vows. And a lot of them fell away, in fact. So, for a spiritual master, then, is it a higher principle to give people a chance to come to Krishna consciousness, even, you know, knowing that, well, maybe they won't, if I give them a chance, they might not be able to keep these vows, which is very important that people keep vows. But is that something that a spiritual master can do, that, you know, you consciously take that risk for the purpose of trying to help that person come to Krishna, give him the initiation, even though they might be thinking that, well, I don't know if this person is going to be able to do this or not. Because it seems like that's what's happened. I mean, that's the only way I can understand what, you know, things that have happened that Prabhupada didn't even, what other ISKCON gurus are doing, speak, you know, right through time up until this present point.
That isn't generally the rule. I mean, when we look at the instructions of Shastra, it doesn't say to do that. Yeah, if you look at the instructions of Shastra, it says guru should very carefully study the disciple to make sure that the disciple is worthy of being initiated. The disciple should very carefully study the guru, you know, to see if the guru is worthy of being accepted. So, the normal instructions of Shastra don't say, you know, like, just do that kind of thing. So I don't think it could be stated as a general principle that that's what one should do. And in our society, you know, there's period of training for disciples. You know, they have to take certain exams. They have to have certain recommendations. In other words, it's on the other end, you know, to be authorized to initiate disciples in this kind of requires that the prospective guru satisfy a lot of requirements and things like that. So what a pure devotee might do in some circumstance where it's absolutely necessary doesn't, in my way of thinking anyways, become a general rule. Of course, it's a big topic. Maybe somebody else has some thoughts about it. Archita.
Well, Prabhupada refers to the Jagai Madai principle, that Lord Chaitanya, they were the lowest of the low, they did so many horrible things, but Lord Chaitanya gave them a chance on the condition that they promised not to do any of those things again. He wasn't loose about it. He didn't say, you know, I know you guys are coming out of a, you know, pretty bad situation and you may slip and fall. And no, Lord Chaitanya didn't say that. He said, I will forgive you for your offense to Nityananda and I will accept you as my follower if you promise not to do these things again. So, yes, the guru is willing to give somebody a chance, but you have to hold up your part. It's not that Prabhupada went in thinking that, you know, well, you know, maybe they will, maybe they won't. Or no, Prabhupada was willing to give them a chance just like Lord Chaitanya gave Jagai Madai. He said that. There was one Jagai Madai then, nowadays everybody's practicing Jagai Madai, but well, I'm willing to give you a chance, but you have to promise. No meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication. Chance 16 rounds every day. He made them promise. He didn't say it was, you know, but it's okay. You know, he made them promise. Now, because he's so compassionate, the Prophet did say that, you know, it's like learning to walk. If you fall, the child falls down, you expect they're going to get up and try again and just keep doing it until they walk. So he did, you know, have that much foresight into the thing that, yes, sometimes somebody may fall down, but don't condemn them. Just give them a chance to get up and go forward again. You see? But it's not that general rule that it's okay to break the principles. That's not the mood.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for a nice class, Prabhu. I think I read somewhere one time where Prabhupada, I think he wrote in a letter, I believe a letter, where Prabhupada said that it's in Kali Yuga, it's in time of war, sometimes an ordinary farm boy, although he's, you know, just a farm boy, he's not very educated, maybe not even very cultured. But in time of war, a person like that, by his activity, may be given a higher position, although he's unqualified. So Papa, I think he was referring to us. He said, this is a time of war. And in this time of war, we have to take unqualified boys and girls and make them into brahmanas in order to spread the Krishna conscious movement. So I think that's where Papa kind of would know, he knew that we were unqualified. He knew that we didn't have the capability, but he did it anyway, and by his mercy, we were able to go on. By his gracious mercy, we were capable of doing things that were extraordinary. So I think that in this particular circumstance, it's well known by Srila Prabhupada that that was not our position.
Thank you, Prabhu. Very nice class. I read a letter also in this regard that Prabhupada said at one time, someone breaking the principles, he says, once forgiven, twice forgiven, third time you're in your own. So now I have another observation of that. We also heard that sometimes the spiritual master says that he begs the disciples to actually do the proper thing. Otherwise, he has to come back again and get them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's
or suffer dreams, right. Bad dreams. And things
so there's
like that.
Certain times he said certain things, Prabhupada, and they're correct. And other times also quote something that is also correct. Can you explain more about it?
Well, I think you explained it nicely enough. You know, those are all things that have to be considered when we're talking about a question like that. Balaram?
Haribo Prabhu, this is a true story that my guru told me. At one time in India, because he went to go to life members and make like members donate to the temple. So there is a sannyasi that is within his group that went to the Babaji and went to learn a trick to put a coin in one of his right ear and would appear on the left ear. And he would start now going to like members and with getting some money from the same people that they cultivated, and he was getting money for this cheap trick. And Tamal Krishna Goswami went to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada informed Prabhupada about this happening. And Tamal Krishna Goswami said that we should write a letter informing our life members that this devotee is actually not with us. And Prabhupada said, don't do that. Get him to see me. So what Tamal Krishna Goswami got the Swamiji to go and see Prabhupada. And they talked. And Prabhupada convinced the devotee, please don't do this. This is not proper. After a couple of months, 3 months or 6 months went on, or maybe a year, he did not do it. But then, actually, like 6 months, he did again. He went back again, and he did it. And Gurudev, Tamal Krishna Goswami went back to Prabhupada, and then he said, he's doing it again. He's doing it again. He's going to the light members, and he's, playing his trick. And he's doing it again. And I think we should write this letter. No. Do not do that. Tell him to see me. And then he got him to see him again. And then he talked to him. And then Gurudev was saying, up to when are we going to be, up to when are we going to keep on tolerating this? And what Prabhupada tell to Tamal Krishna Goswami is, the mercy of Lord Chaitanya is unlimited. In Kali Yuga, the mercy is unlimited. We will do everything. The goal is to deliver the fallen conditioned souls.
Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.